I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 23 years in business at Lighthouse and just entering our 10th year of doing open lines. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2017 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. This is a plug for Charles. Charles did all of it, and we are extremely grateful for his talent and targeted marketing thought. You can also find an archive of past topics on our publication event tab. Now, over 10 years, we have covered almost every topic you can imagine in business. So if you have anything going on in your organization, just look through there, and I'm sure you'll find it. Our second book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Plus, in 2018, we've been very busy. We'll have our third book out, Cracking the Team Building Code, and it will be available again end of first quarter 2018. And we also offer, for those of you not aware of it, skills testing. It's something new for us this year, and we've been getting a lot of traction. So if you want to check that out, go to our site. Those that work with Lighthouse might have met Glenn Croy, who is a new senior consultant and COO for Lighthouse. Glenn has been a COO and general manager for companies with 60 to 600 employees with a strong OD background. We are so glad to have Glenn as part of our team. Our topic today is B2B revenue planning in time of uncertainty. My name is Dana Baroque. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we're going to jump right into our program. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, which we can do remote, by the way. Actually, all of our workshops we can do remote, and much, much more. We have an office in Taiwan, if you're not aware of that. So if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to best interact with a U.S. company, just let us know. Plus, we now have a European affiliate who provides programs for executive coaching and for team building. So Lighthouse is officially global and international. How's that? Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to the number of calls that we constantly get from our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. So our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many as possible on the chat box, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. Also, at the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So you'll want to write down two or three questions you can ask afterwards also. I want to introduce a special friend, close friend, business associate, our marketer, marketing person for Lighthouse Consulting Services, who is Charles Bassotti, president of Bassotti Consulting and Interim Management, Inc. And he's done an amazing job for us. Everything we do from a marketing standpoint must go through Charles for approval. Charles works with company owners and CEOs to resolve two burning questions. How would the marketing function contribute more to the company's growth, and why isn't it? He delivers his services for companies across North America as a consultant, part-time CMO, and as a virtual marketing department. Charles is a senior-level, hands-on marketing leader with over 16 years consulting and interim management experience, who is at the time has helped scores, just like Lincoln did, scores of North American companies to improve their strategic marketing and demand generation, go-to-market planning, and marketing skills. This is the underpinning of 20 years in marketing leadership roles, primarily within small and mid-market technology companies in Seattle and Austin. So Charles is very experienced. He's a frequent speaker, webinar presenter, workshop facilitator. His blogs cover thought leadership and practical tips in the categories of revenue marketing and interim management. He also is a co-author of a very cool book, Leadership on Demand, How Smart CEOs Tap Interim Management to Drive Revenue. And he is a native of Pacific Northwest. Charles has resided in Austin area since the year 2000. He and his wife live in Lakeway, Texas, and it was not affected by the hurricane, which is good news.
Absolutely.
I feel privileged to have Charles with us today in our program to prepare us for the future and also for dealing with today's business issues. Also, at today's end of today's program, you can sign up for our next program, which is Global Strategic Planning. Charles, welcome to Open Line.
Hey, thanks for that warm introduction, Dana. It's really a privilege to be here. You know, and as you were talking about the progress and the growth that Lighthouse has had this year, it reminds me that maybe the next line, or next tagline should be, the sun never sets on Lighthouse Consulting, now that you have offices in Europe, Taiwan, and the U.S.
You know, oh, there you
probably,
go.
Probably a good statement, right?
I like that. Thank you. Write that one down, Charles.
Right. The sun never sets. It's really a privilege to be here and speak with the audience here. I know many of you are friends and colleagues and clients and soon-to-be clients of Lighthouse, and so it's an honor for me to speak with you today. Thanks for your time. You know, as a marketing guy, the topic of revenue generation and revenue planning is really central to my work. I've prepared this presentation to give important tips about revenue planning. While this presentation and my expertise, frankly, is in the world of business-to-business or B2B, much of what I'm going to talk about today is certainly applicable to business-to-consumer as well. So don't be turned off by that if you're in the B2C world. Let's look at what I'm going to cover in today's presentation. I'm going to start with a financial forecast by a very reputable and accurate economist, certainly not me, what I'm going to quote from The Economist, now you can choose to believe the forecast or not. My purpose isn't to push one forecast over another, but my purpose is to encourage you to prepare your company to thrive no matter which way the wind blows in the next 18 months. Therefore, I'm going to give you tips on what you should be doing today to prepare your revenue generation engine. I'm also going to advise you that most sales and marketing plans and planning processes that companies use today are frankly very outdated and they should be retired. And I'll tell you why that is. We're going to look at a revenue modeling tool or an ability that I think is so critical and how you can use it to prepare your company for economic swings. Then, using statistics, I'm going to show why it pays to have your sales folks and your marketing folks plan together using the right planning process. Next, I'm going to talk about how you can afford to have A players on your marketing team. And then I'll wrap up with a discussion of what you should be measuring for proper insight into how well your revenue engine is performing. So we have a very information-packed presentation for you today. Let's face it. For most of us, business is great. And Dana and I were just chatting about that before the presentation officially started. You know, for most of us, at least sales is strong. This is because we're experiencing a period of accelerating growth following 8 years of slow recovery. If only it could go on forever, right? But you know what? History shows us that the economy is cyclical, and what goes up must come down, in other words. I've had several conversations with CEOs in the past month who were thrilled with their sales, but they're up to their eyebrows in related issues, rising costs, talent shortages, new competitors popping up everywhere. But the revenue generation seemed to be taking care of itself because of this buoyant economy that we're in. I could tell that they were in a comfort zone and didn't really have time to think about getting ready for the next downturn. But you know what? As business managers and owners, that's our job, is to think ahead 6 to 18 months and prepare our companies. Therefore, what is the economic forecast for next 18 months? I've been following ITR Economics for over a year, ever since Dana recommended their book to me, and I highly recommend it as well. The book is Prosperity in the Age of Decline. These guys have studied leading indicators for decades. They know which ones are the most accurate, so they follow those, and they've become really, really good at reading the tea leaves, meaning they've become very accurate. Better yet, they make their predictions far enough in advance so we can plan accordingly. I mean, anybody can look outside and see what the weather's like, but what's it going to be like 12 months from now? That takes a whole other skill set, and these guys are really good at reading the economic tea leaves. ITR Economics divides the typical economic bell curve into four phases, and these are important to just understand. Recession, recovery, accelerating growth, and slowing growth. All right, that's pretty darn simple. I think we can all grasp that. What are they forecasting then? Their numbers clearly show that 2017 is a year of accelerating growth. Now, we've just been talking about that. We've been experiencing it, so what? Times are good. But the thing is that subscribers to ITR were advised for 2 years prior to this that this phase of accelerating growth was going to happen in 2017. So they knew that the slow recovery that we had after the last recession was really going to pick up steam this year, and the companies who followed them were preparing for it and are really harvesting the fruit now. What do they say about 2018? They say it's also going to be a good year, but the growth rate will decline. So while we're in accelerating growth phase now, 2018 will be slowing growth. Then in 2019, they're really seeing a mild recession is predicted. And in looking at their numbers, I think the word mild is certainly the key word there. They're not saying that we're going to have another 2008 by any means, at least not based on the forecast or on the leading indicators. Now, let's put this in perspective. I look at 2017 and 2018 forecast and considered that, for instance, if my business, if I'm expecting it to grow or wanting it to grow 15% in 2017, for example, I should probably prepare for a growth rate of only about 8% in my business in 2018, or roughly half that rate of growth. And this is actually what I'm doing. For 2019, I'll plan for a 0% growth to maybe even a minus 2% growth rate because of entering into a mild recession. But you know, that's my business, and yours could be different. I would imagine if you're in construction, you might already be seeing a decline in bid requests, even though you're busier than heck taking care of existing projects. The bid requests you're receiving for major projects may be slowing down just in the face of the slowing economy for next year. What am I urging you to do as a result?
Charles, I want to interject also.
Sure, go ahead.
So ITR, they are what's called the staff economist to Vistage, which is the largest CEO organization in the entire world, 20,000 members. They had provided the members, the ITR people, provided the members 2 years prior to the major recession. In other words, they called it out 2 years prior so people could prepare. So we happened to take their advice, and we actually grew during the major recession, and plan, because we're a plan for it. So this is a very important discussion that we're having today with Charles. And again, I appreciate Charles for you spending the time doing this.
Good. Thanks for that emphasis. Yeah, it just goes to show that they are very good at what they do and giving you time to do something about it, which is so important for all of us. So I want you to go ahead and take a look at ITR's forecasts and methodology. Study others as well, but I urge you, don't put too much weight on media-sponsored surveys and indicators. It has been proven that they're probably the least accurate of any. But gather your data, make a decision, then make your plan based on the economic direction you believe in, and then start working the plan right away. Now, that doesn't sound very revolutionary, I know, but you know what? For many folks, just getting over that hump, deciding, yes, this I'm going to base my plan on this economic condition and start going forward with it. Sometimes that can take a little nudging, and I hope that I can nudge you to do that today. But I urge you to change the way you're planning for your revenue generation, and I want to look at that next. Okay, so let's say that you have that you've studied a few economists, you've decided on what forecast to base your plan on, the key thing here is that how you proceed next will make the difference between planning to survive or planning to thrive. Now, I want you to know that when I talk about revenue generation, I'm really talking about sales and marketing. Those two functions are responsible for generating revenue, especially new revenue in every company. And here's what I urge you to do to prepare for any economic phase, in particular a downside which we're facing. And I'm going to go deeper into each of the following. So number one is to sharpen the strategic focus of your revenue generation efforts. You might be thinking, well, I should be broadening it. We're in good economic times. Well, that is certainly a possible strategy, but we need to be thinking ahead. And so providing focus on what you think is right 6 to 18 months down the road is important now from our planning perspective. Number two, model and stress test your revenue generation engine. And I'll talk to you about how to do that. Number three, align sales and marketing functions with the planning process and a plan. Number four, build agility into your marketing function. And number five, measure what's important. All right. So go ahead.
Oh, Charles, a question just came in from the audience. You keep mentioning marketing, Charles. Mm-hmm. What if a company doesn't do any marketing, only sales? Is any of this going to matter to me?
Absolutely. It does, because we are talking about revenue generation. Number one, we're talking about revenue generation, and if you're in a company that you don't have any marketing people, you don't have a marketing budget or anything, and you just have the sales that are being generated, you still need to be thinking along these lines. And then I will say, even though you may not have marketing staff, you may not have a marketing budget, there are activities that your salespeople are doing that are actually marketing, and it can be looked at in that way if you want to get technical about the definition. So yes, for those in the audience that are in micro businesses or something, say, you know what, we're not doing any marketing and don't have marketing people, I just got salespeople. Don't tune out. This is still extremely relevant to what you're doing if you're interested in achieving your revenue goals year after year.
Charles, another question came in asking you to define marketing versus sales.
Well, that could be a topic of another presentation, and it depends on how broadly you want to define it and what textbook you want to look at. So I'll try not to get too educational about this, and just and from a practical standpoint, the marketing function works at creating the demand, creating the awareness in the market for your companies and your company, your service, and your product, attracting prospective buyers to your company, and moving them through what I call the funnel or stages of the sales cycle to a point where they are ready, meaning the buyer is ready to engage with your salespeople. And one interesting side note on that is we're seeing as time goes on that buyers are less and less willing to engage with salespeople. That doesn't mean they don't want to, but they're going through more and more of the buying process without engaging in the sales with a salesperson. So the role of marketing is becoming is expanding because we're not just building awareness out there as we were, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, where that was the primary job of marketing, was just to build awareness. Now we're doing much, much more than that, and having to bring prospects through the sales cycle, deep into the sales cycle, to the point where they're saying, okay, I'm really serious now. I think I'm ready to make a decision. I've already thinking I want to buy something from you guys. Now I'll talk to a salesperson. That's certainly a generalization. I didn't want to get into, you know, too much details about it, but in some cases, the role between sales and marketing is blurring, and in some companies it could be very blurred, and I don't think people want to get too hung up on the definitions. And if you align your sales and marketing efforts, whatever they look like, to what I call the buyer's journey, those stages that a buyer goes through, then you're all working on progressing buyers through this funnel, and you're not so worried about who's doing sales and who's doing marketing. Dana, I don't know if I answered that effectively,
people
are scratching their heads and saying, "What the heck did he just say?"
No, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay.
Everyone's Googling it right now. Marketing.
Yeah. There's plenty of definitions out there, and you can go ahead with a textbook one if you prefer. So anyway, we're back to the presentation here, and we're talking about sharpening the strategic focus of the revenue generation activities. You know, I talk to many business owners who are like fishermen with a dozen different lines in the water, hoping a fish will strike on one of them. The more lines, the better the odds of catching something, they seem to believe. And in this sort of economy, it's very easy to fall into that trap. Now, that theory might work if you were fishing in the right ponds to begin with, and you had someone to actively work each pole to catch a fish. Otherwise, it's really an unfocused practice that's spreading your resources too thinly and ultimately leads to disappointing revenue performance. So I'm going to give you some tips here on how to get off on the right step. First of all, take your revenue plan off the shelf, and you might need to dust it off at this point if you haven't looked at it since you did it maybe last year at this time, and take a hard look. First of all, you may be calling it a business plan, you might be calling it a marketing and sales plan, you might be calling it just a sales plan. I don't care what label is on the cover, but I want you to go through it and say, and ask yourself, are you focusing your sales and marketing resources in the right direction now based on the pending economic cycle that you decided earlier that you wanted to plan for? Odds are it may not. You may want to revisit the strategy. You see, after deciding on how much new revenue is required for a given period, the next step is to craft a strategy for achieving the goal, right? The absolute best way to focus your strategy is to start with defining the problem to solve. What is the biggest, hairiest buyer's problem your company can solve well? All right, and I'm going to tell you why that's important. I see a lot of plans that result in companies skipping around from market to market, emphasizing one product after the other. To me, these are 10-man plans that have you wandering down the yellow brick road. What I want you to have is a rocket man plan that sets you on a path for market domination. And I realize just now as I said that the term rocket man is being used in other terms these days, but I am talking about the action figure character, not our friend in North Korea, okay?
I just got hungry for lunch for some Korean food, so okay.
Oh, dear. All right, so where to start? Well, focus is key. Look at your current plan. Does the plan focus your strategy on a single buyer's problem that you are world-class at solving and represents a large enough market for you to have your revenue growth achieved? If not, your revenue activities are probably weakened from a lack of focus. Now, let me give you an example. Here's an example from a supplier of plastic feedstock to manufacturers. And they would state it this way. The buyer can't, or our buyer, can't obtain the right grade of plastic feedstock fast enough to fulfill new orders. Now, out of all the possible problems this supplier could solve, it is elected to solve the lack of availability. Good. Well, what's the bad example of how to state a problem to solve? It would be like this. Companies need quality plastic beads. All right, that's not really a problem statement, is it? Whereas the lack of availability is a problem statement. So can you see the difference between the two in terms of clarity and focus? Well, maybe not. Maybe you're not sure what the big deal is. It's just words, right? Well, let's drill into it a little bit and just see how important those words are. Follow this logic with me, if you will. You see, once you've stated the problem to solve, it's relatively easy to define the total solution that solves the problem. And with the problem to solve in mind, it's relatively straightforward to answer the question, who most has this problem? That answer defines our buyer and target markets, doesn't it? With the problem to solve in mind, we can ask who is best situated to identify buyers that have the problem. That leads us to define what? Our sales channel. With the problem to solve clearly in mind, we also see the competitive landscape by asking the question, who else solves the problem? Now, this is a very simple and effective way to create a go-to-market strategy. And I said simple, I didn't say easy. It's actually pretty difficult and somewhat time-consuming to go through the process to make the very tough decisions necessary. But this really beats trying to understand a dozen business books on strategy, doesn't it? It makes it very, very simple, and I like simple. Best of all, this approach is customer-centric. It's not product-centric. Now, if you want a further example of this is how it might look in real life, let's take a look. So we have that same plastic feedstock supplier, and let's go through with their go-to-market, their statement of their go-to-market strategy, what it would look like. The problem, the right grade of plastic bead stock isn't available fast enough to manufacture new orders. What is the solution? Since we know that problem, we can develop a really great targeted solution for it, can't we? So in this case, the vendor says our Ready Stock program guarantees two-day delivery of any quantity and quality of plastic bead stock. Well, that certainly seems that we have a great solution to that particular problem. So let's keep asking our questions and flesh out the rest of the strategy, shall we?
Oh, a question just came in. Are you recommending that companies only solve one buyer's problem and ignore the others?
I'm suggesting that you focus your primary strategy on one problem. Yes. And does that mean that there are going to be that you can, you're going to turn your back on other other problems that you can solve? And the answer to that is no. You can be somewhat opportunistic with that. But having the focus on the problem that is going to give you the necessary, the solution is going to give you the necessary revenue, provides the focus that you absolutely have to have. And as I'm going to point out in the next couple of slides, you know, most of us, I guess no matter how big a company or how small a company, we are resource limited. We have to work within the confinements of our resources. And if we're trying to do too much with too little, if we're trying to solve too many problems, in other words, for the buyer, and have too many strategies, we are not going to be getting traction. We're going to be not going to be implementing effectively. So it's we're going to base our plan on that problem that we are world class at solving. That it's a big enough problem, means the market is big enough that we believe that we can make our money from it, and that's where we're going to put most of our efforts of our sales and marketing engine directed on that strategy. If we happen to get a phone call from somebody else and says, oh, I've got a similar problem, but not exactly, can you solve it? And if you can, oh, sure, take the order. But when it comes to having a go-to-market strategy, really focus on one. If you have different product lines that have different products solve different problems, then you're likely going to have a go-to-market strategy for each of those product lines. So I'm not saying that, all right, if you're General Motors, you're going to have one, you're going to solve one problem. But each brand of your automobiles might. Did that answer your question?
Nope, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so I was going through this example of a go-to-market strategy, and it showed what our the problem to solve was and how easy it was then to create the perfect total solution for that problem once we defined it so clearly. And now we ask the question of who most has that problem? Who is pained the most from that problem? And in this particular example, they said, well, manufacturing and purchasing managers at mid-sized companies in North America who manufacture plastic parts for non-military applications. Now, because of the previous two, because of the problem to solve and the solution, they were able to very precisely identify their target market. Then they asked, okay, who is best able to identify companies that have this problem? And through a discussion, internal discussion, they decided that their field sales engineers, working together with their telesales group, was best positioned to uncover these issues. So it was a direct sales channel strategy. Then they said, well, who else is solving this problem? And they looked around at the competitors that also had solutions in this plastic bead market, and they assessed their strengths and weaknesses, and they said, you know, we can leverage our greater market awareness and strong customer references, but we're going to need to lower our production costs in order to be continue to be competitive. So there was our competitive strategy right there. So the right planning process will enable you and your team to systematically debate and build a go-to-market strategy for achieving the goal for new revenue. And it sounds simplistic, doesn't it? I know in my example here. It is simple, but it's very, very tough to make the right decisions. Realize that if a different problem to solve had been selected, other than the one of availability, everything else might have changed as well. The solution, who most had the problem, on and on and on. In short, each problem to solve will result in a different go-to-market strategy. But as I was just saying, before you decide to cover all the bases with a dozen go-to-market strategies, ask yourself this question. Do you really have enough resources to implement multiple strategies? All right. Enough about that. Let's look at modeling next. And for those of you that don't like mathematics, don't tune out, because this is not going to be a heavy statistical section at all. All right, so thus far I've encouraged you to decide on the economic phase in which you believe you'll be operating 6 to 18 months down the road. From there, you'll have set a goal for new revenue generation, and then you focused your go-to-market strategy on a single problem to solve, one that represents a large enough market and one that you can be world-class in solving. So next, we're going to push some numbers around to model a realistic revenue engine. Let's go into that. Now, I encourage you to use a sophisticated funnel calculator to stress test your revenue engine for different economic scenarios. And a word of warning, the free tools you might find on the web deliver exactly what you pay for. The dynamics of a funnel or pipeline, if you'd like to use that term, requires a sophisticated tool for accuracy, and trust me, I've used both. The right funnel modeling gives you granular insight into what needs to be done to reach your revenue goals. Using a funnel modeling tool also empowers you to apply different variables and see the results. And I think that's very powerful when you can do that. In a sense, you can apply factors that stress test your assumptions. Don't worry, I'm not suggesting something that requires a doctorate in mathematics. If that was the case, I couldn't use it, believe me. However, I am capable of entering some variables into a simple form and have the software, you know, run the algorithm for me. Well, speaking of variables, what variables should we be looking at? Now think about your business. What tends to happen in a downturn? Well, there's several things. First of all, the size of your market shrinks. Fewer people are buying. Your conversion rate decline. Your sales cycle time increases. Your average deal size shrinks. Your win rate declines, and the no decisions tends to increase, which is very frustrating. But all of these things have a profound impact on revenue and those functions responsible for revenue, marketing and sales. By modeling your revenue engine, you can tell in an instant if your revenue objective is achievable or not with the given strategy and assumptions. This is very, very key for your planning. Now, you can see on paper if the model makes sense, or as we say in Texas, that dog can hunt.
We don't do that in California. Other parts of the country, yes.
Now, permit me to give two examples to make the point. For those of you listening and not following along with the slides, I'm about to throw a lot of numbers your way. Hang in there. It's not going to be painful. Just listen to the points I'm making and don't try to retain all the numbers. I'm going to present two fictitious scenarios. Model A for achieving $1 million in new revenue during an accelerating growth phase. Okay? Now, my model B is achieving $1 million, but in a slowing growth phase, such as we're likely to face in the latter half of 2018. Now, there's nothing absolute about the numbers I'm going to give you. They don't represent best practices or anything like that. It's just for example only. So stay with me for the big picture. Here are the important variables that I programmed into the modeling tool for generating $1 million. Average deal size of $50,000. The ratio of contact to leads was 10%. In other words, we convert 10% of our contacts to leads. Leads to proposal, 15%. Our win rate of proposals was 60%. And the time from hello to thank you, in other words, the length of our sales cycle, was 13 weeks. What does that actually then mean for our deal flow and our lead flow? So what does the calculator tell us? Well, it says that in this case, we're going to need to be having conversations with 776 contacts during the year. We're going to need to present 34 proposals and close 21 of them, and our sales utilization will average about 89%. Okay, good. That's fine. But what happens if we have a slowing economy? All right, so we just said that things change in a slowing economy. So I think in 2018, if we want to generate that same $1 million, in a slowing economy, there are some things that are going to change, and we need to factor that into our calculator and see what happens. Let's see our deal size.
Charles, a quick question. Somebody asked, is there a recommendation for modeling tools?
Yes, there is, and I have some links to that at the end. Part of the planning tool that I use, the funnel planning tool includes a very sophisticated modeling funnel calculator as part of it.
Okay. Thank you.
So we thought, okay, our deal size is likely going to shrink a little bit. We said it was $50,000 before. Let's say it's $45,000 now. Our contact to lead ratio is going to fall a bit from 10 to 8%. Our lead to proposal is going to go from 15 to 12. I told you it's going to throw a lot of numbers at you. And we're going to lose more proposals, so we're only closing 50%, not 60%. And you know what? The time, our sales cycle is going to be longer. We're going to say 16 weeks rather than 13. Now, none of these are very dramatic. You know, there are a few percentage points here, a couple weeks there. But together, they have a profound impact on our lead flow and our deal flow. So now the calculator tells me that in 2018, we need to be talking to 1,362 contacts. And oh, by the way, we better be sure that we have that many contacts, that many companies, that many buyers in our market, or else we have a problem. We must generate 48 proposals and close 24. And man, our sales utilization shoots up to 150%, which is not sustainable. So for a lot of reasons, we see that there's some issues in trying to make $1 million with our current strategy in a slowing growth economy. And you know what? I'd rather see the trouble on paper well in advance and know that I've got to start making some adjustments now, and at least to make the math work on paper before I get well into 2018 and say, man, I'm not making the numbers. I don't know why. And it's too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up, because one of the strategies that we implemented before the big recession was the goal of having a lot more companies doing smaller amount of in-depth work style personality assessments. So we were gathering along because volume went down, but we made it up through sheer numbers of clients, knowing that the economy is going to change, and then our volume goes skyrocketing.
There you go.
Which actually happens. So that's just what you're talking about.
That's what. Yeah, and you were smart enough to take a look and say, okay, this is how a downturn impacts my business. What am I going to do about it?
Yep.
You know, I'm not going to hope that everything stays the same, that my deal size is going to stay the same, or anything. I've got to make some adjustments, and you made the right adjustments. So that's a good guy. So, you know, instinctively, we know that we have to work harder for revenue in a downturn, but the specifics elude us. Unless that is, we use a funnel calculator to help us model the revenue engine for different economic situations. So here in these two examples, I got 776 contacts necessary versus 1,362. Big difference. I need to generate 34 proposals versus 48. You know, you can actually scout. Do you ask yourself, do you even have the resources necessary to generate 48 proposals? And in some cases, it might be, no, I can't generate that many. So it's a tremendous decision-making tool and a critical component of any revenue planning that you do. You know, we're talking about sales and marketing here. So let's look very quickly at what happens in so many companies that is really actually hurting them. And I call this, I want you to avoid silo planning. Before I started consulting, I spent many years in marketing leadership positions within high-tech companies. In every situation, the annual sales plan was prepared by sales and handed to the COO. The annual marketing plan was prepared by marketing and submitted to the COO. Never did sales and marketing plan together. Smart companies are dismantling the planning silos, and here's why. According to a global study of B2B companies in 2014, magic really happens when sales and marketing plan together using the right buyer-centric process. here's what happens. Marketing is able to improve its contribution to revenue by 209%. I think it's safe to say for any of the people listening today, if they were able to increase the marketing's contribution to revenue by 209%, they'd jump at it. The other thing that happens when the two are planned together properly is that marketing-generated leads enjoy a 67% higher probability of closing. The quality of the leads goes way up. And another indication of quality is that sales accepts 108% more of the leads that marketing gives them. Again, the leads are better, and marketing's contribution to revenue is stronger. Simply, and there's many other things that are benefit from that, from sales and marketing planning together, but those are really the top points. So the enlightened view is to think in terms of producing an annual revenue generation plan, not a sales plan, not a marketing plan. And please don't lock marketing sales in a room with donuts and coffee and expect good stuff to happen. They need a proven process to follow that systematically guides the team through the tough decisions. And boy, they are tough decisions. All right, so I'm down to my last two tips here. The A-team agility in marketing. I really want you to get that in. If you don't have it now, I want you to get it into place today as soon as possible and get ready for the big game ahead. I want you to play the varsity squad, not the JV squad, in other words. Productivity and agility matter in marketing as much as it does elsewhere in the organization. Now's the time to get the right talent together, working as a team before the storm clouds appear. And don't worry, you don't have to go broke fielding that A team. If you did your revenue planning correctly, you'll have a good idea of the skill set you need in marketing next year and beyond, because you'll have a tactical plan telling you exactly what sales and marketing will be doing to generate the revenue. Adjust your internal team accordingly. Outsource wherever possible, but give yourself time to test the external marketing partners. Like I said, make sure the team is performing well together over the next 6 months when you've got a good economy, you know, the wind's behind your back. You don't want to be breaking in a new team when you're facing tough economic times. Fortunately, any type of marketing talent is available for rent today. Don't be forced into hiring full-time talent that is affordable but less than an A player. Don't hitch your wagon to an expensive agency if all you need is a couple of rock star freelancers a few days a month. Same goes for a marketing executive. If you believe your company can benefit from a senior-level marketing executive, that's great. But think twice before adding that kind of overhead right now. Part-time or fractional marketing executives are readily available. I should know, I am one. And now to my last tip. Owners and CEOs should have visibility into the dynamics of their revenue engine without being buried in detail. Unfortunately, just viewing typical accounting reports show what, not why. Therefore, when it comes to viewing revenue engine performance, it's critical that you measure what's important, and here's what I suggest you do in that area. Each company is different, but I suggest as a start, your revenue dashboard should consist of 7 metrics. These are the metrics that not only tell you what's so in the current period, but they are indicators of how well the machine is running or not. And you want to be sure and include some trend lines in this so you can see what's occurring over time. And so the number one is revenue compared to objective, and I bet you already have that one. Number two, leads to proposals ratio. 3, proposals to wins ratio. 4, average deal size. 5, cost per lead ratio. 6, cost per customer acquisition. How much does it cost to bring on board a new customer? And 7, average time from a lead to a win in weeks. Just like a dashboard on a high-performance car, these metrics give the executive insight into the dynamics of the revenue engine. You can tell when it's starting to sputter or when it's overheating or where the issues are that need to be addressed so that everything can perform well. You know what? If you can measure it, you can manage it. To wrap up, these are the tips I had for you today. Be critical of your current revenue generation plan. By critical, I mean, is it really look at it hard and says, is the plan itself giving you the right focus that you need? If not, then number two, be critical of the planning process that developed that plan. And you probably should retire it and try something different. Number three, model your revenue engine. Run different scenarios for different economic situations and choose the one that seems the most real to you. Number four, make your marketing function smarter and more flexible. And then five, build a revenue engine dashboard. Let me point out for those of you accessing the slides from today's OpenLine presentation, I've included three links. One link to a blog post that this presentation is based on, so you can go back and refresh the things that I've said. There's a link to a page on my site that includes a number of short videos describing the revenue planning process that I've been referring to. And yes, it talks about the funnel calculator and all that sort of good stuff. And I've also included a link to ITR Economics, so you can check them out. So I've really, really enjoyed this time with friends, clients, and colleagues of Lighthouse Consulting. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me today. And now, if we have any other questions, or Dana, you have any questions, I'm all yours.
Well, thank you, Charles. That was great. Everybody, please hold the line in just about 60 seconds. We're going to open up the line so you can ask questions directly of Charles. I'm going to ask you, because we have a number of people on the call today, this is such a big topic, if you could please put your phone on mute, and then please do not put your phone on hold, otherwise we'll all get to hear music. But then when you have a question, unmute your phone. Now, for our next program, Global Strategic Planning, you can sign up for that. Now it's going to be on October 19th, another exciting program. And again, I want to thank Charles for being part of our program. I want to thank Charles for being part of the Lighthouse team. Charles is a fractional CMO for us, and it is phenomenal. We're getting somebody that is very, very high level, and I wouldn't put anything out there that's representing Lighthouse from a marketing standpoint, or even Charles has put together sales presentations for us, and I have to tell you, they work. They close. It's amazing how that works. So if you ever want to talk about that, talk to Charles or you can talk to me. But thank you again. We're going to close this section down. People don't like to be recorded during the Q&A time that's live, so I'm going to close that down right now, and we'll be right back in about 10 seconds.